This morning, America's first news starts right after this.
It's October, and what does that mean? Well, it's Geico-ween, of course. Don't be spooked by high rates on car insurance. Geico is brewing up spellbinding savings that they're crafting just for you. See how much you could save. Get a quote today at geico.com.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Debate changes pending. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Thursday, October 1st. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
What if a moderator could silence the microphone of a candidate who is interrupting? The Commission on Presidential Debates might try it.
A judge has approved an $800 million settlement for relatives and victims of the Las Vegas shooting, which occurred 3 years ago today.
The death toll from recent California wildfires has risen to four as crews tried to take advantage of a break in the weather. We'll have an update.
And the long-term physical effects of the coronavirus.
People who have the coronavirus, they don't just recover. We're starting to call them long haulers, where they have lingering symptoms for weeks or even months. And even beyond that, these people are displaying symptoms. We really just don't know.
Caitlin Owens at Axios on how some patients struggle with health consequences for longer than a few weeks. Changes could be on the way for the next presidential debate after President Trump and Joe Biden failed to have an orderly discussion of issues, since both frequently talked over each other and/or lobbed insults on Tuesday. The Nonpartisan Commission on Presidential Debates, which sponsors televised debates and selects the moderators, said that it would soon announce changes. They could include whether the moderator could shut off a candidate's microphone. Meanwhile, both men offer their own reviews. Mr. Biden spoke on the campaign trail in Ohio.
The president of the United States conducting himself the way he did, I think it was just a national embarrassment.
President Trump before a rally in Minnesota.
Yeah, I would like to. We, by every measure, we won the debate easily last night. I think he was very weak. He looked weak. He was whining.
Separately, about 73.1 million people watched the debate in Cleveland. The two men square off again 2 weeks from today. Well, where do the candidates go now and before the next debate? Analysis from Josh Kraushaar, politics editor at National Journal. Josh, what's the spin from both camps as they return to the campaign trail?
Well, look, I don't think you can really spin it from the president's point of view. The goal for the president was to convince the voters that like his policies but don't like his temperament to support him, to see the more pleasant side of his personality. Instead, he was on the attack nonstop against Joe Biden, was vitriolic in his tone, and just didn't really lay out his argument for re-election at all throughout the 90 minutes of the debate. So, I've talked to some folks in Trump's political orbit. They're putting on a good face, but you're down 7 points. The president's down 7 points on average in the polls. You need to make up that margin, and I don't know what Trump thought he was doing by trying to make it a scorched earth slugfest at a time when he needs to sort of show presidential demeanor and show his most positive face to the country.
How about on the Biden side of things?
Biden was not one of the strongest Biden debate performances, but I think he wins by default. He just had to show up, make an argument, recite his talking points, get in a few jabs at the president, and leave and feeling like you held the lead that you came in with. I think it's hard for anyone. We learned this in the 2016 Republican primaries, that it's just hard to debate Trump, especially when he doesn't abide by the rules and just goes off as he did. Biden's biggest weakness, I think, is still a little bit unaddressed. He said at the very beginning of the debate he is the Democratic Party, but that kind of overlooks the fact that the Democratic Party is moving to the left, and there are a lot of very vocal activists within the party that take diametrically opposed positions to where he stands. He didn't take a position on court packing, which I think could be a possible vulnerability down the road. And, he was a little shaky on the Green New Deal and some of the more liberal positions of law and order, he kind of was hesitant to really take the bait from Trump and reciting the organizations in law enforcement that support him, and there really aren't that many. So, I think Biden had some low moments, but given that the debate was dominated by Trump, dominated by the president, I think he kind of won by default just because he didn't seem unhinged at times.
We're speaking with Josh Krauthaar, politics editor at National Journal. For those of us watching and kind of hoping for some policy nuance, might there be hope that things are different October 15th in debate number two?
Well, the biggest difference, Gordon, is that it's going to be a town hall style format, socially distanced, of course. So you're going to have voters talking to the candidates. If you remember in the 2016 debate, that was the debate where Trump got into Hillary Clinton's space,
yeah,
and made for a very awkward and memorable moment. But ultimately, there was a lot of good exchange back and forth between Trump and a lot of the people asking him questions, and he fared well, or at least did himself okay at that 2016 debate. If he maintains this scorched earth approach when you're actually talking to voters face to face, it would be an even bigger disaster. I mean, his biggest challenge is to convince voters that may agree with him on policy, agree with the Republican Party, and like sort of his messaging on the issues of immigration, trade, where he takes a little bit of a different approach from traditional Republicans. He needs to make that case to the voters. He's not there to defend himself. He needs to make the case directly to the voters. So he'll have a chance to have a do-over and actually talk to persuadable voters next time. But I think he did himself a lot of damage, or certainly didn't help himself.
How did the undecideds view the Tuesday night debate?
There were some Insta focus groups where voters were turned off by both sides. They just turned off the TV before the debate was over.
Wow.
But look, when the president is down in the polls, in every poll nationally, by a pretty healthy margin, the burden is on President Trump to make up that margin.
There's Josh. Josh Krauthaar, politics editor at National Journal. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin have failed to reach a coronavirus stimulus deal during their most recent meeting. House Democrats initially aimed to pass their roughly $2.2 trillion rescue legislation last night, but called off the vote until at least today to allow more time for talks. Mr. Mnuchin was preparing to offer a roughly $1.5 trillion package to counter the Democrats' proposal. New York City Congressman Hakeem Jeffries.
House Democrats remain focused on finding common ground and reaching an agreement that meets the needs of the American people.
The package would reinstate the enhanced federal unemployment insurance and stimulus checks, but the hang-ups are over local government aid and liability protections for businesses. Meanwhile, President Trump has signed a bill to fund the government through December 11th, avoiding, for now, a government shutdown. It's 14 minutes after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, visit planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Thanks for being with us. The death toll from a wildfire raging in Northern California's Cascade Foothills has now reached 4. Firefighters are battling those flames and another blaze that's wreaking havoc in wine country near San Francisco. We get more from This Morning's Mike Gavin.
The two fires have combined to burn more than 100,000 acres since they broke Sunday, about 200 miles apart. Yesterday, crews fighting the so-called Zonk Fire in Shasta County and a separate blaze called the Glass Fire in Napa and Sonoma counties gained some ground thanks to a break in the weather. Meanwhile, a red flag warning for heightened wildfire risks is in effect for today for North Bay Mountains and for areas around the Glass Fire. The death toll since wildfires began in mid-August is now 30. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Meanwhile, Cal Fire officials say they're on guard for a return of high winds in Shasta County, closer to the Oregon border, where the Zog Fire was listed at 7% containment. It's the worst California wildfire season on record
in terms of acreage burned. 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Trump and Democrat Joe Biden kept up their debate stage clash from the road and the rails as they competed for working class voters in the Midwest. Meanwhile, the debate commission is trying to deal with the most chaotic presidential face-off in memory. The Commission on Presidential Debates promised additional structure for future debates to ensure a more orderly discussion of the issues.
Number two.
American Airlines will begin furloughing 19,000 employees today after lawmakers in the White House failed to agree on a broad pandemic relief package that includes more federal aid for airlines. Republican Senator Marco Rubio of Florida told Fox it's Democrats who are holding up relief.
I don't think there's any issue with getting PPP passed. I think the issue is they want it to be a part of a bill that has other things, and it's the other things that there's no agreement on. But we can't wait till November to do this. This is not something you can just put off until after the election and deal with it then.
United Airlines has indicated it could furlough nearly 12,000 workers. Separately, Allstate says it plans to lay off 3,800 people, or 8% of its workforce.
Number three.
President Trump has signed a bill to fund the government through December 11th, averting the possibility of a government shutdown. The temporary extension will set the stage for a lame duck session of Congress later this year. A state judge is allowing more time for the Kentucky Attorney General's office to release the recording of the grand jury proceedings in the Breonna Taylor case. The roughly 20 hours of audio could shed light on how Attorney General Daniel Cameron presented the case to the grand jury. The audio was to have been released yesterday. A court has approved a settlement totaling $800 million from casino company MGM Resorts International and its insurers to more than 4,400 relatives and victims of the Las Vegas Strip shooting that was the deadliest in recent U.S. history. The action makes final a deal settling dozens of lawsuits on the eve of the third anniversary of the mass shooting that killed 58 people and injured more than 850 at an open-air concert near the Mandalay Bay Resort. While President Trump and Joe Biden talked over each other and steamrolled over the moderator in Tuesday night's debate, viewers turned to Google to help decipher what the candidates were saying. During the first hour of the roughly 90-minute debate, Google's top trending searches were K-shaped recovery, Roe v. Wade, how many people have pre-existing conditions, who is winning the debate, and the Affordable Care Act.
Very good. All right. Thank you, Jen. We've heard for years that it's important to have a diversified portfolio, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that kind of thing. But if you've ever looked at a breakdown of the most successful portfolios, you'll typically see real estate. So why isn't it one of the first asset classes you consider when you're looking to diversify? Well, simple. It hasn't been available to investors like you and me until now, thanks to Fundrise. Whether you're new to real estate investing or a veteran, Fundrise can help. Fundrise is an investing platform that makes investing in high quality, high potential real estate as easy as investing in your favorite stock or mutual fund. Fundrise manages more than $1 billion in assets for more than 130,000 investors with a team of real estate professionals that carefully vets real estate projects. Start building your better portfolio today. Get started at fundrise.com/Gordon to have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. That's FUNDRISE.com/Gordon. To have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. Fundrise.com/Gordon. Glad you're with us. Stocks had a big quarter, the second one in a row with dramatic gains. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ hit a string of records in the third quarter. Those indexes and the Dow Industrials all rose yesterday to end the period on a strong note. Meanwhile, pension funds and endowments have been shifting away from the U.S. stock market for years. Some are now reconsidering that decision after the shift has hurt their performance. More from Gregory Zuckerman, senior special writer at the Wall Street Journal. Greg, what's going on?
So historically, pensions have been wary of stock market, investing in stocks for all kinds of good and maybe bad reasons. And in the last few years, it's cost them. The market has done nicely, and yet pensions have less than 50% of their portfolio in stocks, global stocks we're talking about, even less of that in U.S. stocks. So now there's a thinking they may shift a little bit. We're not going to say they're going crazy here. They're not throwing everything into the market. But there's more talk about edging into the stock market.
What's the general investment strategy for people in charge of managing these pension funds? Because for, you know, regular folks, we think, well, if we're more than 5 years out of retirement, we're considered long-term investors. But like every month somebody goes into retirement, presumably or possibly, if you're in a pension fund.
Yeah, the pensions have to have a steady stream of returns because they have a steady stream of obligations, payouts to retirees, medical benefits, and such. So historically, they've looked for less volatility in their investments, which you could maybe argue is a mistake. I mean, if anybody can take long-term risk, it should be somebody, a long-term investor. But again, they've got these obligations they're worried about, and that's part of why they've shifted to things like so-called alternative investments, which is like private equity, venture capital, hedge funds. And they don't go up and down as much, partly just because they don't have to assess their portfolios, the market value of their portfolios, as quickly as the stock market on a daily basis goes up and goes down. So they're smoother returns, but they're not better returns. Especially hedge funds have underperformed in recent years. And yeah, that's cost these pension funds.
What's going on with hedge funds? Why are they underperforming on a slightly separate note here?
Well, there are a lot of reasons. Partly it's the market's becoming more efficient. It's hard for the traditional investor to get an edge. It used to be they had these things called information advantages where they knew a little more than the company about the company than the rest of the market. But because of regulatory changes and just the way the world has evolved with data that other people can access, it's really hard for these guys to get an edge. And they charge an arm and a leg, so you're paying high fees without getting much in the way of an edge. It's a problem for non-quanti hedge funds, and that's cost pension funds and endowments, college endowments that have shifted into hedge funds.
We're speaking with Gregory Zuckerman, special writer at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called America's Pensions Have Been Shunning Stocks at Their Own Peril. Speaking of fees, you referenced this manager in Nevada. Explain what he's done.
So there are some exceptions to the rule, and these guys, including Nevada and some others, a few others, have been a little bit more allocating to equities, to stocks, and it's helped them. They've outperformed. We're talking about 60% of their portfolio in equities, you know, more in line with the 60-40 kind of traditional portfolio that has always been recommended of people. So they're not going crazy with stocks, but they've done much better than the average pension fund as a result.
Thanks, Greg. Gregory Zuckerman, senior special writer at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. There are two kinds of small business owners. Old schoolers who need to physically go to a bank and get charged unnecessary fees. And then there's you. For you, there's Aslo, a free business checking account with invoicing, bill pay, and money transfers, plus no minimum balance, no fees, and no minimum deposit. You'll never get charged maintenance or overdraft fees or have to navigate a phone system that wastes your time. Just go to azlo.com/deal and apply in as little as 10 minutes, not the days or weeks it can take a walk-in branch. And with Aslo's free instant funding feature, you can deposit up to $1,000 and access it instantly. That's one of the reasons Money Magazine called them the best business banking option for freelancers and entrepreneurs. Sign up right now with no minimum deposit at aslo.com/deal and get a free copy of Aslo's Small Business Starter Guide, spelled azlo.com/deal, and sign up with a free Small Business Starter Guide and no minimum deposit. aslo.com/deal. Aslo is owned by BBVA USA, member FDIC.
No fear. Just facts. This is America's First News, This Morning, with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Thursday, October 1. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. There could be changes for the next presidential debate. More negotiations ahead of a potential vote by the House on a new coronavirus aid bill. The death toll from a new Northern California wildfire has reached 4. As many as 40,000 airline workers bracing for layoff notices today. Yankees, Astros, and Rays advance in the baseball playoffs. Thursday night football, Broncos and Jets. I mean, oh gee, wow. Won't it be fun to watch two winless teams? And the Florida Fire Department making history. That story in about 20 minutes. Scientists are racing to learn more about the damage that the novel coronavirus can do to the heart, lungs, and brain. Caitlin Owens at Axios says it's becoming increasingly clear that some patients struggle with its health consequences far longer than a few weeks. Caitlin, explain.
So yeah, some people who have the coronavirus, they don't just recover. We're starting to call them long haulers, where they have lingering symptoms for weeks or even months. And even beyond that, these people are displaying symptoms. We really just don't know for people who have had the virus, whether they had a severe infection, ended up hospitalized or not. We just don't know what this virus is doing long term to our organs.
What stood out to me, too, in your story is that some folks are having the virus found in brain cells. Is that right?
Right. So one of the kind of surprising symptoms of the virus are these either neurological or psychiatric symptoms. And some of those, which, you know, like we're talking about, they do linger. So one study that the New York Times reported on in its preprint, or it was at the time at least, so it hadn't been peer reviewed. It just talked about how the study found the virus in brain cells, which is significant because it's kind of this, with all organs, it's this question of, okay, are we seeing organ damage because of the virus itself or because of the body's immune response to it and the kind of the subsequent inflammation. So this study just kind of proved that, yes, sometimes this is the virus in the brain.
Back up for just a second and explain what we know about some of these neurological symptoms that folks might be going through. Are there details on that?
So just some of the ones that we've heard about are stroke, brain hemorrhage, memory loss. We've just talked about some of this like brain fog and that people have experienced, you know, long after they've quote unquote recovered from the virus. And so, scientists have just been trying to get at the question of why is this virus causing these neurological symptoms? Again, that kind of, it's either the virus is getting into the brain or the body's immune response is causing these symptoms. One study has found that there's been brain damage due to oxygen deprivation. And so we're still trying to figure out which of it is, all of the above, how much they all contribute, and, you know, what it means.
Yeah. Does it compare to other issues, like a pneumonia or something like that?
So that's a great question. And I think that, you know, when we look at the impact on the heart, there's been some alarming studies finding heart damage from the virus, whether that's inflammation and myocarditis has grabbed a lot of headlines because of the fear of what that means for athletes. But it's a great question where these, you know, you have these statistics or these studies finding that, like, you know, one study found 78% of people who had recovered from the coronavirus had heart or abnormalities 2 months later. But what does that mean, right? Like, can we compare that to the flu? Like, we don't look at the hearts of everyone who has the flu, right?
Yeah.
So, you could have a mild case of this, or you could have a severe one that eventually leads to a heart attack and, God forbid, death. So I think we're still trying to attach meaning to these findings and, you know, just how heart inflammation sounds scary, but I think we still need more data to figure out just how scary it is.
I'm speaking with Caitlin Owens, author of Vitals, the daily healthcare newsletter from Axios. Her piece is called The Coronavirus's Alarming Impact on the Body. Do we know, speaking of data, if age matters in some of these studies that have been done?
I think that is an ongoing question. I think what I do know and what the studies have found is that being young does not mean that you are immune from these side effects. As we've seen throughout the virus, it doesn't make you immune to severe complications from it. The same is true long term. You could suffer from this long term is what it looks like.
How about the vascular symptoms here, too? I know you touched on that in the story.
Right. I mean, there's experts are worrying about that. There's a quote that I used in there that problems with the vascular system, which is the body's network of blood vessels, quote, could unleash a global surge in vascular diseases from stroke and atherosclerosis to myocarditis and heart attack. That word is a medical term I'm not familiar with. These experts wrote. And so I just think that what is clear is that this virus impacts a lot of our organs. It impacts the cells that line our blood vessels. And, you know, it can affect the whole body. And it's just, I mean, think about it. We've only been 6 months into this. It's only 6 months into this pandemic. We literally cannot know the long-term consequences of any of this because it has not been around for the long term. So all of this is going to be subject to studies, for years.
Thanks, Caitlin. That is Caitlin Owens, author of Vitals, the daily healthcare newsletter from Axios. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Friday Eve. It is time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, it looks like we found something people take even more seriously than the upcoming elections, barbecue. That's especially true in a place like North Carolina. Fox News says a U.S. Senate candidate in the Tar Heel State sparked a controversy of sorts this week with a tweet in which he appeared to conflate barbecuing with grilling. On Monday, Democrat Cal Cunningham tweeted, "There's nothing better than barbecue except for winning the Senate seat, of course," along with a photo of himself in front of a backyard grill. He also appeared to be selling campaign aprons saying ambassador for North Carolina barbecue. It didn't take long for criticism to start rolling in, however. One user wrote, "Fun fact, Carolina barbecue means whole hog. You're grilling, bro. You're not even close to the same thing." Another joked, "He's grilling over gas. Is there time to get my absentee ballot back?" The North Carolina Republican Party also called the tweet a scandal. In response, Cunningham, who is a North Carolina native, told the News and Observer paper in Raleigh that no self-respecting son of Lexington would ever mix up barbecuing and grilling. He said the burger and hot dog buns were just for show to help sell the aprons.
Eek. Yikes.
Somebody might have gotten fired over this. I don't know. You know how carefully they prepare these little photo shoots for these promotional things, right?
Yeah.
I love these kind of stories because you just imagine all the scrambling behind the scenes and all the conference room meetings that are going to have to take place and the press releases that have to get put out to make sure that we clear up this confusion here.
Yeah, I'll admit, sometimes I sort of kind of mix the terms together, but really barbecue is like the whole hog, you know, from beard to tail, right, over an open flame of wood chips or whatever.
Well, it depends on where you are too. It depends on what region you are. You have to know where you're talking about. Yes, like in Texas, it means brisket, you know. So it depends on the region that you're in. Here in New Jersey, we throw things on a grill and, you know, we hopefully gets cooked.
I've been paying more attention lately to actual temperature.
Yeah.
Like real temperature. Like a thermometer that goes inside the grill.
Right.
Not the one on the outside of the grill.
Right.
Which is not very helpful. Mm. And that's really helped me because I'm usually just a disaster around the grill.
You've taken a step up this year.
Yes, but paying attention to temperature has really helped me improve my grilling skills.
Let us hope so. Oh, and because we can't get enough of small animals eating oversized portions of human food, we bring you this. Currently trending on Reddit, a fat squirrel snacking on a McDonald's cheeseburger. The footage was taken near a McDonald's in Venice, Florida. Viewers were amused because of the animal's chunky physique along with the size of the burger, which looks to be about equal to the squirrel. And the 15-second clip has amassed thousands of views on the site. The squirrel, of course, follows in the footsteps of the original pizza rat, who we first met just over 5 years ago in New York City, and several other junk food-obsessed animals since. 5 years since the pizza rat. Yeah. We missed that anniversary. It was like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Somehow it didn't circle that on my calendar. I didn't realize it's 5 years. I guess I thought at this point it seems like it's been longer than that.
Really?
Because we've talked about so many of these
animals. Well, sure. Yeah, we're up to about a dozen or so, I think.
I agree. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
This year, Michigan businesses have had to adapt. And the Michigan Economic Development Corporation was right there alongside them, helping to connect businesses to new resources, meet new partners, and access the additional capital they needed right from the start. If your business needs support to reach its new potential, the MEDC is available to help in any way we can. Contact us today for customized business assistance at michiganbusiness.org/partnership.
Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals. Thanks for being with us. A new study in the journal Obesity finds the key to working out consistently and keeping off the pounds may be as simple as setting the same time of day for your workouts and sticking to the schedule. Researchers from Brown Alpert Medical School looked at the exercise habits of 375 individuals who work out regularly and found that people who set the same time of day for their workouts spent notably more time working out per week than people who set random times for exercise. Furthermore, they found that nearly half who worked out at the same time of day consistently were early morning exercisers. Author Dr. Leah Schumacher told Medicine at Brown
that future research should look into whether there's a specific time of day that's more advantageous for individuals who have initial low physical activity levels to develop a physical activity habit. But for now, whatever time of day you choose to work out, stick to it. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Coronavirus infection rates in the U.S. remain elevated, and now that states are reopening schools and businesses, there's high demand for tests to monitor the pandemic spread. States reported an average of more than 42,000 new confirmed cases a day and nearly 750 deaths over the seven-day period ended Tuesday. The U.S. this week recorded more than 1 million tests a day, the fourth time that's happened. Public health experts say frequent comprehensive testing will be critical to containing spread.
Number two.
The Presidential Debate Commission says it will take steps to rein in the chaos the next time President Trump and Democratic challenger Joe Biden lock horns. One change under consideration will give the moderator the power to mute the microphone of a candidate who interrupts.
Number three.
Brad Parscale, President Trump's former campaign manager, has stepped down from the president's reelection campaign and his digital firm to focus on getting help. Parscale, who authorities say was taken to a hospital Sunday after his wife reported he was armed and threatening to harm himself, said in a statement he was stepping away from the campaign to focus on his family and get help dealing with overwhelming stress. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin failed to strike a coronavirus stimulus deal during a more than 90-minute meeting yesterday. House Democrats initially aimed to pass their $2.2 trillion rescue legislation last night, but called off the vote until at least today to allow more time for bipartisan talks. Democratic Congressman Hakeem Jeffries of New York.
House Democrats remain focused on finding common ground and reaching an agreement that meets the needs of the American people.
But approving the House bill would be largely symbolic action, as Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has already opposed it.
Lakers by 24, Lakers by 26. Anthony Davis has 24, and Eric Spoelstra right now needs another timeout.
Mike Breen with a call on ABC as the Lakers comfortably beat the injury-hit Heat 116-98 in Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Anthony Davis scored 34 for the Lakers, with LeBron James adding 25 points and 9 assists.
Yikes. All right, thank you, Jen. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. A first for the Palm Beach Gardens Fire and Rescue in South Florida. For the first time in its 57-year history, an all-female fire crew was on call together for the same shift. The women of Station 65, Rescue Lieutenant Christina Krakowski, Fire Medic Kelsey Criswada, Fire Medic Julie Dudley, Lieutenant Monica Marzullo, and Driver Engineer Sandy Ledusky were coincidentally scheduled as a crew recently. The women of Station 65 were thrilled to make history, and the lieutenant said she'll always be proud of the milestone. The Today Show says the women range in age from 29 to 53 and hope to inspire young girls to reach for the stars. Coincidentally, the shift fell on the day that Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. In a statement, the department noted that while just 4% of the nation's firefighters are women on average, 11% of the Palm Beach Gardens force is female. In fact, the agency says 58% of its female firefighters hold the rank of lieutenant or higher. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It's almost as scary as watching your dog growl at the wall and realize he sees something you don't. Get a quote at geico.com.